Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf. How about a cold one on the patio during a nice spring day? But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good to have you with us here on the GM Shuffle. I'm seeing these tweets pop up. I'm sure you have as well, Mike. People saying, according to Spotify, the GM Shuffle is my number one listened to podcast of the year. So I've seen a handful of those tweets. Thank you so much to all those people out there listening. It's pretty gratifying as we get to the end of the year, knowing there's so many people who put us at number one.
It really is. It's humbling, and I appreciate it. I certainly know you do, and I do. And as we continue to build this audience and try to give you unfiltered opinions, you know, I know people say sometimes we're too negative, but you know, the truth sometimes hurts, AD. You know, it's not, how are you going to be positive about Matt Nagy and Dan Campbell? I'd like to know that. How do you craft that? Like, how do you craft that narrative of, oh, everything's fine, you know, everything's wonderful. My name is Rod Wood, and I hired Dan Campbell, and turkey was fabulous on Thanksgiving after watching him call two timeouts immediately in a row. You know, everything's great. You know, there's this unwritten rule, I think, in pro football that you're not allowed. It's almost like, you know, you never hear doctors criticize doctors, right?
Never. Yeah. Never. Everyone sticks together.
It's the same thing in coaching. Like, you know, like you listen to the Monday night broadcast or you listen to any of these, they never critique the coaching. And I get it because they have to go back into the facility again to talk to the coaches. But if you know football well enough, do you really need to talk to the coaches to figure out what they're doing? Can't you come up with your own idea? I'm watching the tape. Here's what I think. Here's what I don't think. Like, how come you're so dependent on the coach? And so therefore, since you're so dependent on him, you won't ever say anything negative about it. To me, I think that I don't see this. Like, my critique of Jason Garrett is really a critique of trying to explain to people why the perception doesn't meet the reality. What's wrong with that? You know, I had a coach that I was critical of for a long time. He's become one of my friends, and I respect him now. He contacted me and said, hey, help me out. And I did. So, like, for me, it's like I'm not saying I have all the answers, because I clearly don't, and I can learn from a lot of people as well. But to me, if you're not trying to learn something, you know, then what are you trying to, if you just want me to tell you everything's rosy and everything's wonderful, then it's just not reality.
It's a common axiom of life. You'll remember the people who are honest with you rather than those who are just nice to you. Because people are going to kiss your ass and lie to you your whole life, especially the higher up the food chain you go. But those who are honest with you, it's kind of like what Little Stevie was saying. You got to have at least one guy in your group who's known you a long time, who's not going to kiss your ass and feed it to you straight. And say, Lombardi, you're full of shit. Yeah. Hey, Verk, you're a moron. Okay, that's fine. I'll take that.
I mean, if I think I'm too hard on somebody, you know, Millie thinks I'm too hard on everybody. She says, go easy on that. Go easy on that. You know, because, she's once, you know, we got two sons in the NFL, and she's like, oh, I don't want to damage their careers, but they stand on their own. Like, I can't, like, defend, you know, they'll get their own jobs. They have their own careers, and I don't want to hurt them, and certainly, but I also can't say something that's not true, you know?
Yeah. It's going to help.
That's been the problem in my career. I mean, that's why I'm not in the league.
That's what makes it a great podcast, though. Unvarnished, authentic truth.
I can't say something that's not true. I'm just not going to say, okay, you're wonderful. That's a great idea. Let's do that.
And you do it in your own unique spin. Speaking of coaches, your kids are coaches. We talked about Lincoln Riley as he's moving on from Oklahoma over to USC. And there's more news involving coaches. Notre Dame and Brian Kelly moving on as he goes to LSU. And now Notre Dame defensive coordinator Marcus Freeman, he's emerged as the leading candidate to be the Fighting Irish's head football coach. He just completed his first season as Notre Dame's DC, and Brian Kelly had pursued him in the past. But of course, Kelly is the major news. The fact he's been with Notre Dame a long time, Mike, well-respected. I obviously was very successful. Notre Dame unable to win a national championship, but got to the college football playoff. And now he says, you know what? I'm going to go over to the Bayou Bengals as Ed Orgeron is moving on. I love the chess pieces. I love the dominoes here. I know we normally don't talk a lot of college football, but this is pretty major news, having a Notre Dame football coach going to LSU and Brian Kelly.
Yeah, no doubt it is. And I think that, you know, LSU, look, let's be clear, is one of the top five jobs in the country, including pro jobs. Okay. So if you wanted to be a pro coach, which Brian Kelly certainly has wanted to do, this job is a pro job. You're going to coach the best of the best in the conference that has all the best players. To me, it doesn't surprise me. I think what happened was, now, Lincoln Riley has indicated to me that he was never interested in LSU and never talked to them. But something was going on LSU's campus, okay? LSU had a catering company all ready to make a major announcement on Sunday night. Like, they had their guy. You know, a lot of people think, me included, think it's Lincoln Riley. Lincoln Riley says that's not true, that he never was interested in LSU, that if anything, it was USC. Take him for his word, like Lincoln, no deal, okay? But to me, why would you call a caterer? I mean, you know, unless Fred Palermo's coming over for dinner, what do you need a caterer for? Like, seriously. So, okay. And then, so here's what I think happens. Trace Armstrong has been involved in this. He's the agent, former player, wonderful man. He's been involved in all this, and he represents Brian Kelly. He also has Matt Rhule, and he has a bunch of coaches. He's on the phone with the AD. I'm sure the AD said, hey, you know, we lost our guy. Trace says, you want Brian Kelly? I'll get you Brian Kelly. Then he calls Brian Kelly. He said, hey, would you take this job? And then Trace has got to be able to go back to the AD at LSU and say, look, I promise you, if you get on the phone with Kelly and he likes what he hears, he's willing to leave Notre Dame. He's willing to leave Notre Dame. And I think that's how it happens within a 48-hour period. I think Brian had always had the itch to leave Notre Dame. I think he didn't think he could take it. Now, he says he could, but I don't think he felt like you could really compete on the highest level. I think that's, you know, and I think there's probably some truth to that. But LSU, you put big boy pants on, you're in a big-time conference, there's no excuses now. You know, you're going to be able to go in there and compete with the best of the best. And look, Brian's won everywhere he's been, so there's no reason to think he can't win. The only thing I would say, AD, is if you look at the quarterbacks at Notre Dame, he's never really had. Ian Book is probably one of the better quarterbacks. I mean, he has never had a quarterback that you say, wow. And if you're going to win a championship in the Southeast Conference, you better have a wow quarterback. You just better have a wow quarterback. I mean, it might hurt Georgia this year without a wow quarterback, as great as they are as a team. So I think that's the case. Now, for Notre Dame, Marcus Freeman, that's a tough job. If Notre Dame's really smart, they hire Freeman and they hire a David Cutcliffe or somebody to be the assistant head coach to help this guy learn how to, because Notre Dame is not the job to learn on the job.
Cutcliffe, obviously a great resume, obviously a very strong offensive mind with Duke. It's interesting, when I was covering college football at ESPN, everyone would always say about Notre Dame, listen, because of their academic requirements, it's just so tough for this team to compete. Like, if you were just an outsider, you go, wait, Notre Dame, that's a historic school. They haven't won a national championship since 1988. Like, what's wrong? What's the problem? They got tons of money, great boosters, national following. And they'd say, yeah, but the academic requirements are so hard, they don't prioritize football the way the other schools do. Do you buy that?
I think that's full of shit. Let me ask you this question. Do you ever know an elite quarterback who didn't have good grades? Did you ever know an elite quarterback who wasn't dating a prom queen? Did you ever know an elite quarterback who didn't have all his shit together? I mean, like, seriously, that's just a cock of crap, right? If you're Notre Dame, you could throw your shit out there and say, I'll get whoever I want at quarterback.
Like, right, you're Notre Dame.
I'm Notre Dame. I mean, like, you're telling me that the best quarterbacks in the country can't enroll in Notre Dame? I mean, they're always high, you know, the prom queen, they got the high academic standards, great SATs. Come on, give me a break. That's just a bunch. You're just picking the wrong one.
Yeah.
It really is about picking. And then don't tell me, you know, you can't get – there's a ton, it's the United States of America. There's a lot of players, and a lot of them have good grades. I mean, the Michael Mayer kid, the tight end they got that looks like Gronk, I mean, he went to a Catholic school in Kentucky. I mean, how many Catholic schools are there? You know, you go to a Catholic school, you get good grades. I mean, I think it's just a crock of crap. It's a convenient excuse for you. Maybe you're not just picking the right players, or you're settling for somebody. You know, you sometimes you got to dig a little deeper. And that's what would worry me about Brian. I mean, Brian is going to have to do a good job of coaching the quarterback in that conference. Because as we see with Mississippi's great season this year with Matt Corral, and it's going to take a great quarterback to win the Southeast Conference. You just don't go in there and just say, okay, we're going to win with defense, we're going to play, you're going to have a great run game. No. There's too many hard games during the season.
Always like Brian Kelly. I'd be there with Joey Galloway, Danny Cannell, or Jesse Palmer on the sidelines. It'd be like Notre Dame, Alabama, college football playoff. Like, hey, good luck, coach. You guys got a chance. And then it'd be like 14-0 mid-first quarter. Like, hey, well, you know what, coach? At least you guys made it, okay? It's a hard thing to do to beat Nick Saban in Alabama. Let's get to the games themselves. Best of luck to Brian Kelly and LSU. We got football tonight. Cowboys and the Saints. Good game right out of the gate. Taysom Hill led offense on attack. Dallas' suspect defense. Dallas has some questions, Mike. They've lost three or four games. Mike McCarthy's going to miss the game of COVID, although that may be addition by subtraction, depending on who you talk to. So Dan Quinn will handle the responsibilities. I think this is an important game, Mike. There are only two games up right now in the NFC East. Listen, I don't think Philly and Washington are good enough to catch Dallas, but I do think for their psyche and for their mindset, hey, let's go, boys. Let's knock out New Orleans and get a nice win here.
You know, I think it's a huge game. And Taysom Hill playing quarterback certainly gives New Orleans a little bit of juice. Because of his ability to run and throw the football, especially down the field. He's not the savior, but obviously they feel they'll get Kamara back. The Cowboys get Amari Cooper back. They won't get Randy Gregory back. They'll get DeMarcus Lawrence back. So they're getting some of their players back, which is critical. They have to get that. They have to be able to do that to survive. I mean, this is a hard place to play, New Orleans. I mean, they beat the Bucs in there a while ago. This will be a really hard game for the Cowboys. This will be a hard game for the Cowboys because you know, both teams are playing on, it's a 1 week schedule. They'll get their 10 days off after this game. But to me, I think this is a really hard game. It's a hard game to handicap. It's a hard game to go with. I would definitely lean towards taking the Saints and the points because I think the Cowboys, it's going to be a little bit of a rock'em sock'em type game because the Saints are good on defense. You can't deny what they've been able to do on defense. And when you look it over, you know, the Cowboys are going to have to play well up front and starting with their offensive line. Smith has been hurt. Terrence Steele is on COVID. And then you come back and then Collins, is he healthy? I think that's going to be a really hard game.
Yeah, Cowboys at -5, favorite to win, but we'll see what happens tonight on Fox and NFL Network. Chargers and the Bengals, 6-5 LA and 7-4 Cincinnati. The battle of two of the most inconsistent teams. The Bengals right now at -3. Just when they start to look great, they'll fall apart. And the Chargers, obviously, they'll surprise you when you think their team's going to be out of it. Justin Herbert really struggled in Denver. I want to know if that's going to continue against Cincy's really aggressive defense.
You know, I think the Chargers are just not good enough on defense. I mean, this is a game where the Chargers have struggled to really play great defense over the last month of the season. I mean, they have, every time they play against a good quarterback, a passing quarterback, they struggle. Now, last time they beat the Eagles because the Eagles were just, really, it was all about the ground game. The Eagles threw for less than 200 yards in that game. Look, they can amass all the points, but all the yards in the league. I mean, they had 533 yards against the Steelers. But when you look at this team, it's their inability to create turnovers on defense. And if they're going to beat the Bengals in this game, they've got to create turnovers. They've only had three turnovers created in the last 5 weeks. Three. That's all they've had. They can't make enough plays. As good as Bosa is, you know, and it's funny, I've watched this mob show on Amazon. And the Bosa family is related to the head of the Chicago mob, the outfit. Have you ever seen this?
Tony Accaro? What is this on? What mob show is this you're watching here? What reality show?
It's on Amazon. It's kind of like a docu-series. It was 8 parts, and it's really about the history of Al Capone. It was really kind of good. But Tony Accaro, who ran the Chicago mob after Capone, that is his daughter, married a Bosa, and so Joey Bosa, I think, is his great-grandson.
Wow.
How about that?
not going to mess with that guy.
Anyway, hats off, and we'll get back to the course at hand. But I mean, I think that's the biggest issue, right? The Chargers can't get off the field. They're 31st on third down defense. Reds on third down, they can't. They're horrible in the red zone. They're 24th defensively. It's for as good as Staley looks like he started out the season to be, he hasn't been very good. Lose one, win one, lose one. They two-game lose streak, then they come back and win one. I think this will be a really hard game, although this will probably be the best I think the Chargers played all year. But Mixon is coming on, and I think it's going to be hard to stop the Chargers, to stop Bengals' run game.
Yeah, and Mixon's been excellent so far. Almost 1,000 yards rushing he's had so far this year. Eckler, obviously a good running back as far as the Chargers are concerned, and you certainly have no shortage of good receivers here when you look at Chase and all the rest that those guys can provide. So that game is something that we can look forward to. You know, elsewhere, it's interesting. When you look at some of the slate here, it gets a little bit confusing because you say to yourself, all right, I think some of these games should go a certain way, and then I don't really know. For example, Washington, they're 5-6. Like, I don't think they're a good team, Mike. I really don't.
They're in the playoffs. They're the 7th seed in the playoffs. Can you believe that?
It's insane. Like, this is one of my fears. When you expand playoffs, you go, okay, there's always going to be some munchkin that comes in as the 7th seed, and you go, this team has no business being here. And then all of a sudden, they'll pull off an upset in the number 2 seed, and you go, oh my God, what are we doing here? But anyways, let's put the cart before the horse. They're against a Raiders team, which again is so inconsistent. The Raiders are favorite at 2.5, but Washington's actually won 3 games in a row. They're 2 back of Dallas in the NFC East. We're calling them the fighting Heinekes. Like, yeah. I have to at least give them a fighting chance. I have to respect them, no?
No doubt. I mean, you have to. I mean, look, this is a game that the Washington football team should... I'm surprised they're not favored in this game. I really am. I mean, the Raiders were coming off a 3-game losing streak. They win the overtime thanks to my man, Sean Hockley. You know, that overtime win that they get there. They give up 437 yards. They get 509. Their offense came back this week. But can they come back against Washington? Washington, since Chase Young's gone, has done a much better job since the second half of the Kansas City Chiefs game 5 weeks ago. Since that game, they were in the lead 13-10 in that game. And they went into halftime and they gave up 21 points. Since that game, this Washington football team has only given up 300 yards one time, and that was to Green Bay. They gave up 304. Now they're 3-2 since that game, and they've won. They've beaten the Bucs. They dominate. They beat Carolina. They beat Seattle. I think this will be a hard game for them. They've got to be able to put pressure on Carr. But I think they're starting to peak at the right time. They're running the ball better. Heinicke has played really well. I mean, you can't deny, you know, what they did, you know, the 2-point conversion. Russell didn't see the guy in the back of the end zone. I think he had DK Metcalf. If he just throws it to the back corner, it's going to tie the game up. But they found ways to win. The kicking situation, who knows? I mean, they're on their 4th kicker now. They could mess that up. I mean, last time they brought a kicker in, the guy could barely get the ball back to the line of scrimmage. So who knows what's going to happen? I kind of like Washington in this game.
Yeah, Vegas is coming off that thrilling win at Jerry's World on Turkey Day. Maybe you say, okay, Vegas is due for a letdown. Washington has been streaking, and they could win their 4th game in a row. As always, Mike will give his picks Sunday on Substack and on Twitter and Instagram. Raiders favorite once again at -2.5. Coming up next, Ravens and Steelers. That game never disappoints, although Pittsburgh has been brutal. I mean, they're a 500 team right now. The 2021 on the lamb MVP has been big. Ben Roethlisberger, their season's on the brink. Lamar and the Ravens grinding out wins. Plus, Monday Night Football in Buffalo for first place the AFC East. And my man Steve Levy already tweeted today, 80% chance of snow Monday in Buffalo. Can't wait for that.
Did you doubt that?
No, exactly. I mean, are you kidding? It's going to be fun to watch that game. We'll talk about it next right here on the GM Shuffle.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. With same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more, don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down. I mean, these second-round playoffs have been unreal, and we have the conference finals now on the horizon. Make sure you get all those futures bets in before the value disappears. And if you're new to DraftKings, you gotta check this out. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code SHUFFLE. That's code SHUFFLE for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5 only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available. For problem gambling, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Ravens and Steelers, one of the worst losses of the Mike Tomlin era last week in Cincinnati. Pittsburgh reeling, back-to-back losses, a tie to the Lions, and the Ravens come into town. They're favored by -4.5. Now, I get why the line isn't bigger, Mike, because, listen, I think Steelers get up for a rivalry game. They were embarrassed. They're clearly going to be better than what they were against Cincinnati. And Baltimore, they pulled out a nail-biter on Sunday night against the Browns. Lamar threw 4 picks, and he was awful. I think the Ravens win this game, but they've got something to prove here. They want to get back on the winning track, and Pittsburgh certainly has a chip on their shoulder.
I mean, the Ravens haven't played good in a while, right? They didn't play good against Chicago. They got very fortunate to win that game. They made a huge play at the end of the game with Huntley throwing the ball down the field. They beat the Bears. They didn't play well in that game. I mean, you know, they didn't play well last week, and they were fortunate enough to win that game. So, to me, and then the Steelers, I mean, look, the Steelers look like they're the boxer that just can't fight anymore, right? I mean, Ben looks like he's stuck in cement shoes. You know, they can't put pressure on him. I think, but this is Steelers, that, you know, this is always a close game. These are always two teams that fight it out. And Ben's going to have to play really well in this game because the weakness of the Ravens is their inability to play great pass defense. And because of that, you know, that's where Ben's got to shine. They'll play the run. They'll be able to stop Najee Harris, but they'll have a trouble trying to stop, you know, Ben. But Ben looks like he's done. To me, again, this whole Lamar thing with this offense with John Harbaugh and the Ravens, I don't understand why they keep fighting it. They keep putting him in shotgun. Like, let this guy run some other things better than just RPOs. But, you know, they're married to the scheme, and I'm just telling you, this is going to end up where they're going to fall short again.
So that's the story with Baltimore, and that's why they're just so inconsistent. It's frustrating to imagine what that team can do. AFC North, though, feels like a two-team race. I can't imagine Pittsburgh or Cleveland climbing back into it. Can you, Mike? I think it's Baltimore or Cincy.
I do, and I don't think, you know, Cincy dominated them before the bye. You know, Baltimore wins the overtime game against Minnesota, fortunate to win that game. Minnesota misses a kick, you know, and then they come back. They get beat on Thursday night to Miami. They're fortunate to win Chicago. I mean, you talk about one of the most fortunate teams in the league. They beat Detroit, fortunately, right? They're very lucky. Indianapolis, they come roaring from behind. They dominated the Chargers. I mean, the one thing about the Ravens that if you're a Ravens fan, you could honestly say we haven't played our best football yet. Like, we haven't played, we're 8-3 and we have not played our best football yet. But they got two tough games. They got Pittsburgh. They got to go back and play Cleveland again. They go Green Bay, Cincinnati, the Rams, and the Steelers. I mean, this is a must win for Baltimore because on this schedule, there's no easy games from this point on.
That is definitely a gauntlet down the stretch. And then we get to Patriots and the Bills. Cannot wait for this game. From Orchard Park. Bills are favored -3. It was very, I think, interesting what you said last week, Mike. As good as New England is playing right now, number one ranked defense, obviously Mac Jones has stepped up. You said this is still Buffalo's division. Even if the Patriots right now are technically a half game up, it should be Buffalo that's favored. Now, they dominated the Saints on Thanksgiving. Defense looked great. That, to me, is the matchup I'm looking at. I know Bill Belichick's got this defense rolling, but I want to see Mac Jones in the offense against the Bills defense on the road. I think if Mac Jones can step up in a pressurized environment like this, hostile, inclement weather, I don't think anyone's doubting him, but that would go a long way towards believing Mac Jones has truly arrived.
You know, I think this is going to come down to who's the more tougher team. Who can physically control the line of scrimmage? And when you look at Buffalo during the course of the year, when they've had troubles, when teams have come out and said, we're going to punch you in the mouth. Like, we're not really scared of you. We're going to punch you in the mouth. And, you know, we see Indianapolis runs for 264. I mean, Tennessee wasn't scared. They ran for 146 against them. Even the Chiefs ran for .120. You're going to have to control the line of scrimmage. You're going to have to bang it. You're going to have to convert short thirds and shorts. You're going to have to take the game to them. You're going to have to take the game to them. You can't let them get away with Milano inside, smaller linebacker. You've got to take the power of your team and push them back, which is what the Patriots have done a good job of. And so, and then the Patriots are going to have to do a really good job of controlling Josh Allen in the pocket, not letting him get out, not letting him make the plays that he wants to play. Dare them to run the ball. Dare them to see if they'll run the football. I think it's going to be a great game. And I think more than anything, weather's going to determine it. How you built your team based on the weather is going to be so critical. This is why, you know, when you sit there in baseball, you design your baseball team around the park you play in. In football, you have to design your team around the weather you play in. You've got to. And we'll see if Buffalo has done that. I think their offensive line has got some liability. Now, Mac Jones going up there to play in Buffalo, snow, cold weather, Monday night football, it's going to be a playoff atmosphere. It'll be interesting to see. I'm anxious to watch him play in that game.
We always talk about coaching. How about the Brian Dable, Bill Belichick chess match? Obviously, you've spoken very positive of both these guys. That's just going to be fun to watch. Those guys trying to out-scheme each other, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, Brian knows what Bill's going to try to do. Brian knows that Bill's going to try to contain the quarterback. He's going to have to do things to offset him. And they're going to basically, both coaches have spent most of their time just watching the games against one another. How can we attack them? And then what happens during the game is the adjustments. Like, what are we going to do to adjust it once we figure out what he wants to do? And we know Allen wants to run the ball. He's run the ball more than ever. And the Bills need him to run the ball. And we watch the game. You got to keep him in the pocket, force him to play quarterback, force him to handle this situation. And I think that the weather will dictate it, right? So we know it's hard to kick the ball in snow. So short field goals are going to be the issue. You can't go long field goals in this weather because it's hard to kick it. Those balls are frozen like kicking cinder blocks. So, yeah, it'll be the chess match between two. Plus, McDermott against McDaniels. McDaniels plays against the McDermott. They know how to run the ball against Buffalo. So there'll be that chess match. I think it'll be a great, great game.
I think it's a massive game for the Bills. If they win this game, they're 8-4. The Patriots are 8-5. Okay, the Bills have a half game edge. If the Bills lose, they're now 7-5, and the Patriots are 9-4. And it really feels like the New England will be in the driver's seat. So I think Buffalo wins the game, but I think that -3 feels right about there where it should be. It's going to be a close game and a fun game to watch on Monday night. As always, send us your mailbag questions to gmshuffle@gmail.com or feel free to send us a message on Instagram @thegmshuffle. This is from Chris from Denver. Love the pod. One thing I noticed with all these teams going for it more than ever on fourth down, that's a turnover if you don't get it. You gave them the ball right where you just were. How is that different from a fumble, and why don't we count that as a turnover? The analytics people never mention that.
It's unbelievable. They never do. They never count it as a turnover. And to me, it should be in the stat sheet. And that's why there's so much hidden yards in that stat sheet. Like, for example, you know, no one talks about the penalties in the kicking game, right? So if you punt the ball to me and you're backed up and you're punting from the back line of the end zone and I get the ball at midfield and there's a holding call on me and, you know, and now the ball is at the 35, right? And as opposed to being at the 50, or I say I returned it to the 30, but I got the ball at the 45. I returned it to the 50. I returned it to the 35. I had a 15-yard return, but now I'm starting to drive at the 25. Add up those yards. That's the hidden yards in football. And it's the same thing with this turnover. Missed field goals and turning the ball over on fourth down is a turnover, and it goes into that category. Just because you didn't misplace the ball on first, second, or third down doesn't, it's only the sole reason. It should definitely change. It should definitely change. And so to me, I don't understand it. We have to adapt that. It's like, why don't we spend more time on television talking about the 4-point play? Third down in the red zone. I mean, I don't understand how the NFL doesn't have a sponsor for the red zone fourth down play. You know, call it the 4-point play sponsored by Michelob Ultra or X-Chair. Let X-Chair sponsor it. Let X-Chair sponsor it. You know, like Jesus, God, sit in your X-Chair on all fourth downs, on all third downs in the red zone, you know, sponsored by the X-Chair. Relax. I mean, it's like ridiculous. There should be a graphic that comes up. The fans should know how significantly important that call is and the result is.
One more game I want to squeeze in before we do the pop culture minute. Broncos and Chiefs on Sunday Night Football. KC is favored by -9.5.
Wow.
Denver, like if they had a quarterback, Mike, you go, all right, if they had a quarterback, they'll be okay. But no, they don't have a quarterback. There's a team that's been too inconsistent. And the Chiefs, now you feel like Mahomes and them are going to start rolling. I just thought the line to me was interesting. Like 9.5. Like, okay, everyone is really buying back in on KC, right?
Yeah, and a team, they buy back in on KC, and KC doesn't cover. They're 2-9 against the spread. They don't cover. And everybody buys back in on them. It's hilarious. You know, it's like, it doesn't take much to fall back in love. You know, it's like ridiculous. And like for me on this game, like I have this game as a 7-point game, you know, and my numbers on my power ranks. I mean, Kansas City has definitely improved defensively. There's no doubt. But Teddy Bridgewater, last time he was a 9.5, 10-point dog, they went into Dallas and won that game. Now, do I think they'll beat Kansas City? No. But Andy Reid coming off a bye, always hard to play, you know. But I think Denver's playing really well defensively. I think they'll give him some trouble.
And another line I want to mention, Jaguars-Rams. Talk about a team in need of a patsy in the Jaguars. That'd be the Rams. -13. We'll throw you a little fresh red meat here to the line. Get your game back. You can go beat up an Urban Meyer's team.
Yeah, we'll talk about how great they are. You know, I was doing some work on the Rams, and really it's interesting. Under Goff, the Rams averaged about 24 rushes a game, right, last year. This year they're averaging 24 rushes a game. Under Goff, they were at 29. I mean, they can't run the ball to the same level. And I think because of that, because again, I'm not a proponent, running the ball leads to field goals. I get that. But there is a physical sense of toughness, and it protects your offensive line. And I think because they can't really run the ball to the same level, that offensive line has gotten exposed. And we're seeing Stafford throw the ball to the other team like he did at Detroit. I mean, this is one of those, last time they went out to the West Coast, I mean, look, the Jaguars, last time Urban went out to the West Coast, he got sent home 31-3 by Seattle, who's not a good team.
Yeah.
So what do you think about what's going to happen in this game?
Seahawks, terrible right now. They got their hands full. They're 3-8 at home against the 6-5 San Francisco 49ers. All right, now time for the pop culture minute. My wife really wanted to go see House of Gucci. And I wanted to go see it. I just appreciate, Mike, how many more times can I see my man Al Pacino on the big screen? I mean, he's 80 years old. And there's Al just doing his thing, playing the father of the Gucci family. Lady Gaga, obviously, I don't want to say a gold digger, but she knew what she was getting into, okay? She's marrying Adam Driver. He's in the Gucci family. They got all these riches. Overall, though, I found the film meandering, a little bit aimless at times, but it's got a lot of style. Ultimately, it's style over substance, the production design, the costume design. But to your point, the tweet that you said, everybody has a different accent. Jeremy Irons still sounds like he has a British accent. Pacino kind of sounds like a little bit of Brooklyn Italian. I don't know what Lady Gaga's doing. Driver sounds like he's okay. And the best, by the way, is Jared Leto, who's unrecognizable. He's like, hey, what do you want from me? He's like doing your classic overdone Italian guy, you know, bald, got like a fat
suit
on.
The pizza parlor accent.
The pizza parlor accent, yeah. So I can't wait for you to see it just to go, okay, rate the Italian accents 1 to 6. Jeremy Irons is the worst one.
That's my man Joel Solomon. I mean, he nailed that. He said that the Steelers have as many personalities as they do, and Gucci has a dialect. I mean, obviously there was a dialect coach on this movie.
No, you guys just all kind of do your own thing and we'll figure it out.
Yeah, the worst is when they do the Italian, like the pizza parlor guy. Yes. Like seriously, like, you know, that's like, and you know, he's got the apron on he sounds like he's just over the top Italian with stains on the apron, you know, just made a fresh pie. This is not my pie, you know,
Right.
Like, that's so bad.
I saw in New York, I think I tweeted you one time, it was in Little Italy, there was like a sign that says, you're taking my space, I break your face. I'm like, that's that classic Italian.
Yeah, I mean, it's so bad. I mean, no, they get ridiculous. It so bad.
Yeah. But anyways, that's House of Gucci. How about, I want to mention this too. We just taped the 200th episode of Cinephile, which is really cool. Go check it out on MetalArk. I talked to James Andrew Miller, the author of the new HBO book.
I just downloaded that book. I'm going to start listening to that book. I got to finish my Frank Costello book, but I got to download that book because I saw some things about The Soprano in this book.
That's why I want to tell you about it. There's stuff about Gandolfini. I don't want to spoil it for you, but I'll just go ahead. There's an excerpt in The Ringer. I had no idea about this. So we knew Gandolfini had demons, right? Battle with cocaine, alcohol. Sometimes he'd be out boozing. They're ready to shoot. He wasn't there because he had a bender. I'm like, okay, it happens, whatever. But there's a story in there. Chris Albrecht, who's running HBO, David Chase, Gandolfini's sisters, went to his place to have an intervention. Like, this is truly art imitating reality. We all know that when Christopher had the intervention, there was an actual intervention for James Gandolfini. He walked in and like saw them and was like, fuck you guys. And looked at Chris Albrecht and was like, hey, you can go ahead and fucking fire me. I'm like, this is shocking to me. Like, what The Sopranos. We know there's drama on every show, Mike, but it's amazing how tumultuous it was. And Gandolfini, generous guy, big-hearted. But man, that guy had some demons. I can't wait for you to read the book.
Obviously, I can't wait either. Now, they also talk about, in this book, they get into Succession and The Wire too, right?
Yeah, any HBO show. I mean, listen, The Wire.
So it's all HBO. It's all based on HBO.
Yeah, oral history. And they talk to every executive and artist. And like David Simon's fascinating. He was like, you know, I don't make shows that rate very well. And The Wire, like every year we had to grind it out a few more episodes. And we never had Emmy recognition, not big ratings. But now the show's considered a classic. Like it's amazing how HBO, they truly... A lot of people say this, but they value artistic integrity. If it's high quality excellence, we're going to do that. And Succession, I mean, that's a huge hit for them to get back to where they used to be.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, and I don't know where it's going. I haven't been caught up on Succession, but you know, to me, it seems like some of these shows, they kind of, that's what made The Soprano and The Wire so good. They had built in storylines that they could alter, like when they went to the dock or when they went to the schools or in The Sopranos, you know, it's Richie Aprile and now we'll shift it over to Ralphie and then we'll come back with Feach. You know, they had to, and Melfi controlled everything by what direction she wanted to send the show in. So, but like Succession, it's always hard for me to figure out, like, that's the problem with Billions. Where are you going to go with this? Like Billions, they had to bring in the new guy to be the demon, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's like you're repeating the same thing over again.
And one thing, Succession followed the model of The Sopranos. One, hey, unlikable characters, who cares? As long as they're interesting and the dialogue is acerbic and fresh and funny, it's fine.
Yeah.
And don't worry about hiring stars. We make stars. James Gandolfini was a working actor. He'd done some things. He wasn't a major name. Edie Falco was in Oz. Okay, no. These guys are going to be household names. Succession's done that just as The Sopranos did.
No doubt. I think that's it's the dialogue. The words that come out of their mouth are more important than who they are.
Yeah, I can't wait for you to download and listen to the book. As always, check out the GM Shuffle. Thank you to all of you. By the way, I looked it up. 200 episodes of Cinephile for me and Mike. This is our 204th episode of the GM Shuffle. So
we
missed our 200th episode.
Yeah, we didn't even get a cake. I could have gone to awards and got a cake. Jesus. Christ. Any chance to eat cake, I'm all for it.
Let them eat cake in honor of Marie Antoinette. We'll talk to you next time on the GM Shuffle.